I'd like to introduce Cameron Maul, and we're very happy to have him here today to present on mobile app design. So, Cameron, it's yours, all yours.
Thank you, Philip. I hope everyone made it in okay. I hope you've got the slides as well and that you can hear me okay. This is a new experience for me. I've got the presentation open here. I've got two chat windows, two IRC windows open, trying to catch any comments that may come through towards the end, and then I'm speaking into the phone to all of you. So if we have some technical difficulties, just bear with us as we try to work through this. So what we'll do is we'll go through this presentation. I'll try and explain as we're going through and tell you the slide we're on and things like that in case you get lost. We're, of course, going to start on slide one, and then we'll just go down from there. Let me just briefly introduce myself a bit more. I've been designing web interfaces for about 7 years now. I know, of course, design well, but also XHTML and CSS really well. I co-authored CSS Mastery with Andy Budd and Simon Collison. And I started researching the mobile web about 18 months or so ago, trying to figure out how someone like myself could make the leap to mobile, trying to find some middle ground between the two, to understand how we could, and if we could, apply some of that existing knowledge of kind of the desktop web and transfer that over to the mobile web and understand its limitations and exploit its possibilities. So, with that in mind, flip on to slide two. My lawyer wanted to be here today but couldn't make it, so he sent this in his place. This is just a quick disclaimer that these are my views and opinions. This is not necessarily the official position of the W3C. So they've been kind enough to invite me here to offer those opinions, and we'll see where it goes. Slide three. Now, you, all of you listening, will likely be experienced or knowledgeable of XHTML and CSS. You're probably familiar with good markup techniques, and you're most likely unsure about this mobile web thing. You've probably had some experience, maybe not, in developing for the mobile industry, but in terms of the mobile web, that might be kind of a question mark at this point. If you were standing around me and I asked you each to raise your hand, how many of you have browsed the web on your mobile device, probably all of you would raise your hand. And then if I were to ask you how many of you have been delighted by that experience, my guess is only one or two of you might raise your hands, because it seems it's a bit of a painful experience right now. And so I hope this presentation is both practical in understanding the limitations of the mobile web, but also at the same time encouraging for all of us to try to embrace it and to make the leap. Slide four. There's a lot of a legacy attached to the mobile industry, where it's come from and where it's going. Slide four. You see a big 1910 on that screen. What that references is in 1910, Swedish electrical engineer Lars Magnus Ericsson, most of us will recognize that name, of course, well, he built a telephone into his wife's car. He was trying to experiment and see what he could do with using phones on the go. And so he built this phone into his wife's car. The car, as he drove, he would have to actually stop and connect that car by wires to the poles and, you know, to the overhead telephone lines. This was a bit of a toy for Lars, but it worked nonetheless. Now, granted, had he driven off with those lines attached, it would have pulled down the pole or ripped something and so on. But the point being is that while the event itself wasn't all that significant, what followed would be. And the fact that we've been experimenting with mobility and phones for almost 100 years now, that's fascinating to me. Slide six. John Agar, who wrote Constant Touch, an excellent book on the history of mobile devices, said that pocket watches provide the closest historical parallel to the remarkable rise of the mobile phone. So you think about watches. They began as an expensive status symbol, but soon enough, most Westerners had a watch. Mobile phones, first, for example, cost the equivalent of a small car. But now, of course, I would bet that everyone listening in has a mobile device and the stats just continue to rise. Flip over to slide 7, in fact. Just a few brief staggering numbers about where we've come, or what the trend has been. 1996, there were 100 GSM phones in 103 countries at that point. By 2000, you had 10 million iMode users in Japan, kind of a primitive mobile web, so to speak. In 2002, we already had 1 billion mobile phone users worldwide, and it is projected that by 2009, we'll have 3 billion mobile phone users. That's half the planet. So we're saying by 2009, half the planet will have a mobile phone. Now, that's exciting for us as developers to think about all of those devices that could potentially access this mobile web. Slide 8. And then in the UK, we have more mobile phones than humans. This is an actual stat that I pulled from somewhere. I'm not exactly sure what to think of that. Maybe we've got 2-3 phones per person. But rather interesting. Just another indication of how prevalent these mobile devices are. Slide 9. Now, with all these staggering numbers coupled with the number of devices on the market, this presents a rather interesting quandary. If you flip over to slide 10, you'll see a reader poll, at least the start of it. This was a highly scientific, statistically significant poll that we conducted. Well, actually, it wasn't. It was just more, I polled a lot of my readers to get just a glimpse of what devices they were using and where they were. And so on slide 11, you see just a brief snippet of that. So we had about 400 people participate. Of those 400 people, we had 159 unique handsets, and you see the top handsets listed there. Those 159 handsets were manufactured by 19 manufacturers, and the participants were in 44 countries. Now, we also had more than 12 carriers with those participants, though I didn't ask that question. Some responded. I would assume we had 2-3 times as many carriers. You get the idea that, boy, with 400 people, we've already got 160 unique handsets. Man, that's a lot of handsets that we've got to understand how to develop for and all of the limitations that their user agents may or may not have. Slide 12. Joe Schefter. Designers face a proliferation of capabilities that make the early mobile web look like a playground. And in some ways, this early mobile web is certainly like a playground. In fact, if you go to slide 13, we see some of that. We have WML, we've got XHTML, we've got XHTMLMP, the mobile profile. We've got XHTML Basic. We've got a plethora of user agents, a widely varying coding practices, URIs. Is it mobile.yahoo.com or yahoo.com/mobile and so on? And so it certainly is a playground right now. You know, if we think the desktop war that we went through with standards a few years ago was bad, wait until we see what we're going through with the mobile web and all of the user agents in rage or battling with those standards as well. Slide 14. That leads us to ask the question then, what is the mobile web? If you flip over to slide 15, you know, we see a few screens that were taken on some of the devices that I have. Is the mobile web the resourcefulness of BBC Mobile? Or perhaps the timeliness of FIFA World Cup in mobile format. I would assume a lot of us perhaps accessed that site on our mobile device during the World Cup. I know I did. Is it the convenience of eBay Mobile, the pleasure of Flickr on the go, the utility of StreetMap, the benefit of Technorati Mobile? Or perhaps is it not user agent driven, but app driven, something like Google SMS search? Or perhaps even better, something that remains to be discovered, a technology that we just haven't seen yet and will kind of come up from behind and surprise us all. Slide 16. There's plenty of reasons to be optimistic about where we're headed. We have more mobiles than PCs right now, and that trend will likely continue into the future. There are more mobiles than landline phones, and web usage is continually increasing. But perhaps most important for us, we can utilize existing skills to embrace this new medium, this mobile web, and understand how to develop for it. Slide 17. Okay, so this leads us to understand then the crux of the mobile web, or perhaps doesn't lead us, but we need to step back for a second and understand the crux of the mobile web, and that is context. Okay, so on the go, we understand that things need to be relevant to the context that I'm in. Let me give you an example. Flip over to slide 18. Here is my portfolio on my site, for example. I might ask the question, how would I replicate this in mobile format? Well, if you look at slide 19, it says, no, that's the wrong question. We need to instead, flip over to slide 20, we need to instead ask, what is contextually relevant about my portfolio page? Is there anything that someone would want to see on the go about or from my portfolio? Slide 21. We can certainly attempt to accomplish the same in mobile. Here we see in the background my portfolio in a desktop browser, Firefox. Then in the foreground, we see my site with all styles and images turned off. And so you can see that the code, the XHTML, is structured well enough that it could probably render okay on a mobile device. And in fact, to the right of that, you see Opera Mini. This is an Opera Mini screenshot, a mobile device browser attempting to render my site. And it does a decent job of it. But the point being still is it relevant? I'd be flattered if people wanted to access my portfolio on the go, but really it just doesn't make that much sense. Why do you need to understand about what I've done and see examples on a tiny little device? And so, again, we need to step back and understand the context of all of this. Slide 22. Well, if we're attempting to understand the context, maybe we need to understand what we're talking about when we say the mobile design, what those two terms mean. So here I see a note from someone. The background was Firefox. Foreground is Firefox. The style turned off. Right is Opera Mini. Thank you for that clarification. All right, so slide 22, mobile design. Well, let's define first mobile. Mobile is more than merely being wireless, okay? So we're talking about mobility. We're talking about something being relevant to where I am. I might be out at the store. I might be in an elevator. Slide 23. Design, what is design? Well, design is first and foremost communication. We might define it as being a medium through which a message is conveyed and response is sought. Now, if we put those two together, we see slide 24, the combination of the two. Therefore, mobile design is the art of communicating within an environment of mobility. And as with any art form, there are fundamentals that must be understood. Slide 25. Let's briefly talk about some of those fundamentals. We don't have time to cover all of them, but I'll just briefly touch on a few of those fundamentals. Slide 26. Most devices today that are being sold are WAP 2.0 devices. In fact, I would assume that all of you probably have a WAP 2.0 device. What that means is, if you flip over to slide 27, that means your device most likely supports XHTML. Because of the specifications in WAP 2.0, it also must support WML as legacy. But the important point being is that it supports XHTML. It probably supports XHTML Mobile Profile, XHTML Basic, the two profiles used for developing mobile sites. Or at least moving forward, the recommendation is that XHTMLMP, or the mobile profile, is the official markup language of WAP 2.0. It has its own doc type. And perhaps the biggest plus for us is that we can test this in a desktop browser. Now, that doesn't mean we can test how it actually functions on a mobile device, but that merely means we can test it initially to see if our code renders at least how we intend it to. And then we go later and test on devices. Slide 28. Well, what this means for us is that we can transfer the same knowledge, our existing knowledge, to mobile. So we've been developing for XHTML CSS on the desktop. We can at least begin to use some of that for the mobile web. Now, of course, there are plenty of limitations. But before we get to that, flip over to slide 29. I want to exploit just a little bit further this possibility of using existing knowledge. We can take, here's a site I designed, for example, about a year and a half ago now at this point. We can take a site like this, English360.com, slide 30. in purple, you can see that we can extract just a few components that might be relevant to mobility. So we need to know, of course, the logo, the navigation, maybe a brief introduction, and maybe people would want to know about, you know, what the latest blog posts are on the go. Maybe those that are following this site may be interested in that. And so on slide 31, we see that. This is an actual kind of working proof of concept. This is at English360.com/mobile. On the left, you see it rendered there in Safari, as it might on the desktop. And over to the right, you see it rendered in Opera Mini. It will render fairly similar in Nokia's browser and other browsers. For those less advanced browsers, it's still likely going to render okay enough to access it on the go. And you notice there, I put in the slide, this is powered by movable type. This is fascinating because I did this in about an hour. This is only one page. You've only got the home page here. So I didn't go on and do all the individual entries and other pages, but it was a proof of concept to say, yes, we can actually take something like even just movable type, set up, say, an extra index file, code it according to some of the guidelines for coding for mobile devices, and have it display okay, at least enough that people can navigate, understand a little bit about the site, track the latest entries without choking their device with, a huge page weight or anything like that. So at least the idea is fascinating that we can do it. Slide 32. Well, this brings a big however. And if we flip over to slide 33, XHTML and CSS support is highly inconsistent. So again, if we think that having to code for 3-4 browsers on the desktop has been tough, wait till we try to understand the mobile web and having to develop for 40-plus user agents. Now, to understand some of the inconsistencies, flip over to slide 34. About a year ago, we set up some markup test pages to understand what devices can and cannot do right now. You can see those are posted at CameronMall.com/mobile. Slide 35. In fact, if you just flip through slide 35, let's start with 35. So here you have some heading tags. You've got the H1, the H2, the H3, and so on. Over to the right, you see that rendered in a Nokia S60 browser. I think this was from my Nokia 6680. But unfortunately, it varies widely. In slide 36, we see that. And so here we have several screens for mobile devices, and you can tell that the size, the bolding, and so on varies quite widely in just these five screens. So imagine, again, 40 different user agents and how they might render. Slide 37. Here we have some lists, access keys. Slide 38, here we have some images, some tables. Slide 39, here we have some more advanced features like borders and backgrounds and even floats. Surprisingly, some mobile devices actually support floats. I guess their user agents do, which is a bit surprising as to why you'd even want to do that on a screen so small. But I guess the moral of the story then in slide 40 is test on target devices, not emulators. Emulators can be helpful to a point, but really when it comes down to it, you've got to test on the actual target devices of your audience. And you need to understand what they're going to be using from the outset. You shouldn't develop and then come back and say, devices are people in our audience using? Of course, that's something you discover at the onset, that is. I was interested to read about Yahoo and what they did for the FIFA site during the World Cup. They said, okay, we're going to develop for 10 devices that are varying that, you know, you might have a Razer, you might have a Nokia 6680, you might have something a bit older. And they said, if we can get it to display well for these 10 devices, chances are that it will display well for just about any device. Now, I own, for example, 4 devices. I own a Nokia 6680, a Nokia 6800, a Motorola Razer, and a Palm Trio 650. Now, just across those 4 devices, sites render quite differently. And so the trick becomes, can I develop for every device? Well, you need to be realistic and say, well, first of all, our audience may not be using every device. And second of all, it's going to be difficult to do that. So maybe we need to do like Yahoo and develop for 10 different devices. That very substantially from device to device and say, okay, if we trust it to work on these 10, chances are it's going to work on most of the phones out there. Now, lest we get ahead of ourselves, let's step back and look at the bigger picture. Slide 41. Before we get too concerned about what devices we'll have to test for and those we will not have to test for, perhaps we need to understand the methodology, the approach of developing for the mobile web. Slide 42. Now, this is something that I wrote about several months ago when Brian Fling and I authored a series on this topic, and this is kind of a small summary of that series and these four methods. This first method is actually just to do nothing. So we say, you know what, I'm just going to leave this alone, I'm going to ignore it, and let it be and see what happens. Now, surprisingly, this adheres in part to this idea of the one web that I know the W3C, in fact, has talked a lot about device independence, or the web being accessible by any person from any device from literally anywhere. So in small part, it adheres to that, but it also relies on the user agents to reformat on the fly. Now, there's pros and cons with each of these. The big con with this one is the fact that it does nothing to address the relevance of being mobile, the context. Slide 43. See, if we did nothing, for example, this is Craigslist, a popular site here in the U.S. For posting classifieds. If we took Craigslist and said, you know what, I'm not going to do anything, let's just leave it as is, well, Craigslist does not have any images on it, at least on the homepage. But A, it scrolls terribly long, so on my device this might be 12 page scrolls, or the equivalent of it. And in addition to that, this markup is 31K. Just the markup is 31 kilobytes. Now, if I'm paying by kilobyte, that's going to be a cost. That's going to be a third of a dollar every time I go to access Craigslist, the homepage, just the homepage. Slide 44. Second method, strip the images and styling. There are a lot of sites out there like Squeezer that will strip images and styling on the fly. You can just type in a URI and it'll strip it for you and be able to access it that way on your mobile device. And there are other ways to do it using PHP and so on. This isn't a bad method. It relies on the implicit hierarchy in the HTML. On my site, for example, that portfolio page we looked at, the HTML is structured such that if all the images and styling are turned off, you know what, it's not a problem. You can still view my site okay. Now, the big downside to this is that the markup weight is still a consideration. You may still have bloated pages. You may have pages, as we saw with scrolls and so on, that aren't addressed by just removing the images and the styling. Google also has a feature that you can, is much like Squeezer, where you can enter in a URI and it strips it down. And they actually paginate it as well, which is kind of a nice feature. Slide 45. Handheld style sheets. Now, this has kind of been the poster child of the mobile web and other forms of alternate access of the web. Well, let's address the pros for a second. Certainly, you can access, with handheld style sheets, the biggest pro is that you can, and you've got one URI. There's no duplication of content, really. You just use a separate style sheet to hide certain things, to reformat, to linearize the content. And really, this is inherent in CSS. And so that's just a beautiful feature of CSS that's already there that we can use right now. The biggest downside, however, is the fact that it addresses primarily the aesthetics of a site, the presentation, and not necessarily the content. In addition to that, the handheld media support is very inconsistent as XHTML and CSS support is. Some devices will display it properly, will display the handheld style sheet. Some will ignore it entirely, and then others, like my Palm Trio, for example, if I use the native browser, the Blazor, it actually mixes the two styles if there's a handheld and a screen style sheet, which becomes, of course, a bit of a mess. So not too consistent right now. Slide 46. The fourth method is to then develop a mobile-specific site or application. This is often called just an optimized site. The biggest pro is the fact that it's very contextually relevant. it really addresses where that person might be, what they might want to access on the go, and so on. The biggest downside then becomes the fact that you have duplicated content. So now you're having to develop a desktop version and a mobile version. You're probably ignoring this idea of device independence by doing that. You know, is that the best route to go? Well, it depends on what your organization is attempting to achieve. And in slide 47, we see the summary of these four methods and perhaps the advantages and disadvantages of each. On the bottom, you've got the SSR, or the kind of the do-nothing method, rely on the browser to reformat. That's based on a term from Opera, small screen rendering. The second one is just to strip images and styling. The third is handheld style sheets. And then finally on the top, a separate mobile site. Now on the left, you see it goes from simple to complex. That's for us as developers. So on the bottom, if we do nothing, of course, that's the easiest method. On the top, it's very complex. Now on the bottom, from left to right, we see that it's slower, faster. That's typically rendering. Something with heavy markup weight is going to render slower with images and so on than something that's been optimized specifically for a mobile device, as we scroll over to the right. And then the value, kind of at an angle here, the value tends to increase for the user as we go up the scale here. It's not necessarily saying that the fourth method, a mobile site, is the best method, but it probably means that the value is increasing for that user as we address this idea of context. Slide 48. Now again, the method you choose relies, first of all, on what your objectives are as an organization and what the needs of your audience are. And then we ask this question, well, do I need to miniaturize or do I need to mobilize? Slide 49. If I miniaturize, then I'm probably repurposing the existing content that already is there and that I can use to make kind of this mobile mini site. In slide 50, Craigslist. I mentioned them earlier. I'm going to mention them for another couple minutes here. This is another case study we did, kind of a static prototype. This is a popular site here in the U.S. for posting classifieds. So you can post things for sale. You might post housing, apartment, flat availability. And we did this about 6 months ago for a conference here in the U.S. Slide 51. This is what Craigslist looks like in a browser. Yes, thank you. Classified being for sale advertisements for those of you outside the U.S. So Craigslist in a desktop browser, slide 52. We have, well, let me explain the context of this. We approaching this project, said, okay, what are the primary use cases for Craigslist? What are people coming to do? We figured it was important to understand that, first of all. And so we listed out six. These aren't the only six cases, but we felt these were the six most important ones. Now, two of them, you see, have strike-through. Well, post the listing in forums, we felt that wasn't all that relevant, or it just didn't make sense that people would post a listing or access forums on the go. They might, but the relevance is a bit low. And so we said, okay, there are four of these cases. There are four that are relevant to mobility. Slide 53. So then we have those four facets there off to the left. And we say, okay, search, that's probably going to be the top element. Categories, probably most frequented. The event calendar, well, they need access to today and tomorrow, and then a choose area thing where you need to select by zip code or city name where you are, and then you'll get a Craigslist specific to your location. And so this was kind of the hierarchy of these elements. So in slide 54, we see what this mock-up would look like. And so we see the logo, we see the search, we see those four facets, or at least the categories, that is. If you look on slide 55, you'll see the same thing, except with some descriptors next to them. So here we have search, we have the categories. We included only the most frequented ones that might be relevant, again, to mobility. And then finally down at the bottom, perhaps searching by city, zip, or name, or offering suggestions if not found. In slide 56, question here, is this rendered? No, this has not been rendered. This is just merely a mock-up. But in slide 56, you might see what it would look like if rendered. We tried to use what the actual styling would be and so on. And this is what it might be rendered like in Opera Mini. Other browsers, again, might display it similar as well. Byte 57. So that is what we might do if we were miniaturizing Craigslist. Now, if we were going to mobilize it, well, here we have something that I like to call are the three C's, content, context, and component specific. Here, if we mobilize, we understand those three things and say, okay, how does it need to be content specific, context specific, and so on. Slide 58. Here's just a diagram to perhaps visualize how a mobilized Craigslist might work. I might, on my desktop machine, let's say this weekend I'm going to look at houses for sale. I might access Craigslist on my desktop. I might dive in there and find some that I like. And then I might have a my.craigslist account. Currently Craigslist doesn't have this. They might offer this at some point in the future. We don't know. But let's just assume they do, okay? So I populate that with about a half dozen houses that I'm interested in into my.craigslist. Then I would use my mobile device when I'm out actually driving around looking at those phones. I would dial into my.craigslist using my mobile device, and it might present just a snippet of information relevant to me driving around looking at these houses. That might be the address, that might be a price, that might be a phone number, and maybe just a brief description about the place, maybe some small photos even. So here we kind of bypass saying, okay, let's just shrink Craigslist down, and now we say, okay, what's relevant to being on the go? Maybe we need just a separate my.craigslist that I can access with my device. Now, slide 59, what if we say, you know what, forget that. Let's not go to all that hassle. Let's just rely on LBS, which is location-based services. Nearly every device sold here in the U.S., and I think in Europe and other places as well, now has a GPS chip built into it, which means, well, or could mean, can we utilize position-relevant data? So here we take advantage of position-based infrastructure to deliver data relevant to our location. It could be extremely targeted. So I might be on the street and pull up Craigslist, and I might be instantly shown the 10 homes closest to me that are available for sale without doing anything to select that criteria. Now, when we talk about LBS, location-based services, this then brings up the question of driving forces. So go to slide 60. What are the forces right now moving the mobile web forward or fighting against it in some ways? Slide 61 shows us just a few of those. Most of what we've talked to up to this point has been that we're addressing the mobile web as if it were using user agents, much like we're accustomed to in the desktop web. Well, in the mobile space, there has been technology that completely ignores user agents. That is just a different mode of thinking. One of those being SMS, for example. This has been around for years. How do we utilize SMS as a piece of this mobile web? You know, we typically think of SMS for texting. But what about SMS search? I know Google and Yahoo, for example, are doing SMS search. So I type in, using a text message, hotel, zip code, and then Google will spit back to me by text message the three hotels that are closest to me, or closest to that zip code, that is. PayPal is doing some interesting things with text to buy right now, seeing an ad or something and texting to buy something based on a number in that ad, or even sending money to people just using your mobile phone. J2ME, this is perhaps the most common form of mobile application development. It deals with Java, these Java-based applications, though it has its share of issues as well. You have some porting woes with getting these to work on a wide range of devices. Typically they do, but there are still issues to be dealt with. You know, is that the way to move forward with the mobile web, J2ME, and these Java-based applications? How about Ajax? Now, we're talking about mobile devices here. This sounds kind of silly to talk about Ajax, and I tend to agree that it is, but there have been some people making a case for Ajax being a big player in the mobile space in the next few years. Ajit Jokar, I don't know if that's how you pronounce his name or not, but he is an expert in Ajax and the mobile web, or at least mobile industry. He said that Ajax will be the preferred platform of choice for mobile applications, even at the expense of J2ME and XHTML. Now, I don't know that I agree with that. There are a lot of problems with Ajax on mobile devices, but needless to say that the potential lies there for something like this to happen sometime down the road. SVG Tiny specifically, this allows for 2D graphics. It's supported by many mobile browsers already, including Opera, Access, OpenWave, Obigo, and so on. Is this the way to move forward and to render and display graphics? Of course, you can't do an entire site just using SVG, but could it be a crucial piece of that, especially for maps and things like that? And then finally, location-based services, which we just talked about. This is tapping into the power of location, delivering extremely targeted content. And if you look in slide 62, if we talk about LDS, we cannot talk about it without understanding that, well, this quote, "The mobile device has the potential to act as a significant reporter of data rather than a mere consumer of data." And so up to this point, we think of our phone as being kind of a consumer of data. What if that changes? What if it becomes then a reporter of data? Slide 63. Here's one example. This is available, I think, just in the U.S. right now. I actually tried this in Europe when I was over there about a month ago, and it looked like it worked okay. It just didn't pull in the tags properly. I would assume they're developing for other areas, but right now, the idea is that you can take a picture here in the U.S. with your phone. You can then upload that into Flickr, and it pre-populates the tags, or at least provides those tags that were relevant to wherever the picture was taken. So now my phone is reporting data because it took a picture, and it embedded with that was data about where the picture was taken. So this is this idea of geotagging and my phone, using my phone to tell me where, or tell other people where I've been. Slide 64. What about device detection? What about all those user agents that are out there on mobile devices? Here, device detection is merely trying to sniff out the user agent strings for individual devices. This is where we talk about content adaptation. We deliver content based on upon user agent, or at least the user agent that's been detected by that string. Some of you might have heard of WRFL, or W-U-R-F-L. This is defined as just an XML configuration file which contains information about the capabilities and features of several wireless devices, actually many wireless devices. It's available at SourceForge, WRFL.sourceforge.net. I can post that later if you'd like that URI. Now what this attempts to do is to help people understand how to develop for devices, what the user agent strings might be, and more than that. But getting back to device detection, that is, there are some downsides to this as well. If you talk to those who've done device detection, they'll say it's a sticky issue. It doesn't always work as intended. You can even manipulate the user string to be something else and so on. Maybe instead, I just don't know, this is my personal opinion, I don't know that device detection is the way to go moving forward merely because of the issues it presents. I really think something like what Yahoo's done, and Yahoo proved that it could be done on a large scale. And that is, let's say Yahoo, for example, we ignore device detection partially, okay? I need to post an article later that references this because they still did detection somewhat to deliver basic and advanced versions of the site. But the point being is they said, you know what, we're not going to detect every device that's out there and then deliver a very specific site according to that device. We're just going to take 10 devices that we know vary and develop for those 10 devices and trust that if it works on those 10, it will work on other devices as well. Slide 65. Back to user agents for a second. When we talk about user agents, what about proprietary user agents versus cross-platform user agents? What if cross-platform user agents were the way moving forward to develop for? That would make our job easier, right? So if I had, for example, I knew I could develop for something like Firefox on a mobile device and knew that it would display across 20 devices pretty much the same. We don't have that luxury yet, but we're perhaps moving in that direction. Or it could be one direction, right? Maybe proprietary user agents are still the way to go, but maybe not. So we look at something like Opera Mini, Nokia, the S60 browser being based on Safari's web core, for example. On my 4 phones, I have Opera Mini installed, and it displays sites relatively the same across those 4 devices. Is that the way to develop moving forward? Again, it might make our job easier as developers, but is it practical? will that many people actually download a browser on their own, a cross-platform browser? Will they be pre-installed on phones moving forward? I know, for example, who was it? T-Mobile has pre-installed about 400,000 devices with Opera Mini. What if we see other operators or network operators doing that with a Nokia browser or other browsers? That might make it, might level the playing field is what we're talking about here. And then what about going beyond mobile phones? Flip over to slide 66. What if we step back for a second and understand that, hey, the mobile web is not just accessible from desktop PCs and phones, but what about cars and gaming machines, even vending machines and watches? How do we develop for that? Here on slide 66 is the Nintendo DS browser. This is rather interesting. You can go to that URL later and watch a video that shows how this is used. It's kind of a split-screen experience where on the bottom you have the entire screen and you have a little window which you can control what you'd like to see, and then on the top it shows kind of that zoomed, that expanded view. I think, I haven't seen it yet, but I think this functions like the S80 browser. Again, I could be wrong because I haven't seen this. Those of you in Europe have the luxury of having those devices more advanced than we do here in the U.S., and so I haven't been able to play with it yet. But this brings up the question, is this another way to develop for the mobile web? Here we probably don't have to do a lot of adaptation, but rather the device is now re-rendering. Now the Nintendo DS has a larger screen, it's different in that way and so on, so we can't necessarily assume that it will function for all devices moving forward. 67. What about best practices or even standards? This is really on slide 68 where the W3C comes into play. I was rather excited when I got the invite to speak to all of you because I'm fascinated and I'm enthused by what the W3C is doing with the mobile web initiative. I had no issues with kind of shouting hooray for this initiative. This is W3C chartered, that is. There's been input by mobile developers and companies, mobile companies, that is, and they've put together this best practices, kind of a working document. Its principal objective is to improve the user experience of the web when accessed from mobile devices. Now, the last time I printed this thing off, it was something like a 34-page document, so it's certainly big, very detailed. On slide 69, that means, of course, because of its length, we don't have time to cover all of it. Here are just a few sample guidelines from that, from those best practices. Use valid markup. Of course, I mean, we should be doing that anyways, right? But on mobile devices, it's actually more important than perhaps it is in the desktop space, because some devices just won't, flat out won't even show a site if it doesn't have valid markup. Use tables only if supported by the targeted device. Use text equivalents for non-text elements. So that would typically be an alt attribute, alt text for an image. And you can see the URI for that document. Again, please go back and read that. I don't know that you'll read through the entire thing, but there's at least a good summary towards the start of it to help you understand what some of these guidelines are. I've been crying ever since I started researching the mobile web. I've been crying for, I don't know if we can call them standards, but something that we could use to provide more consistency and make it easier for us to develop. And these guidelines certainly help move us in that direction. They help us understand, hey, what is the minimum screen width we should develop for? And all of these wonderful other ideas that we can perhaps agree to. If not, you agree to at the outset, then understand, here are the guidelines, how can we work with that, and how can we improve upon those guidelines moving forward? Slide 70. There are two other things, there are many things, but here are two other big ones from the Mobile Web Initiative. One is Mobile OK. You remember those little buttons we used to throw on our sites a few years ago, that this has been HTML certified. And all these other little things that we had to prove that our XHTML and CSS validated or something along those lines. Well, the mobile OK is a little bit like that, but it's certainly much more than just a button. In fact, the spec says that it defines machine-readable content labels, which may be applied to content to indicate that the content and its delivery pass a suite of tests based on the mobile web best practices. And so what that means is that this machine-readable content label might even be used by search engines to prioritize mobile content. I think this is a fascinating idea, and to see that people could become certified in a way with their sites would certainly help those search engines and other things help us understand, okay, what's been optimized for my site? Not just been optimized, but optimized according to these guidelines that we can agree upon. Second is the best practices checker. This is really cool. I just played again with this yesterday. It's in alpha right now. But this is kind of like a validator for checking how well your mobilized site adheres to the best practices guidelines. Try it out. Go put CameronMall.com/mobile. Pop up that URL and then put in the test field, CameronMall.com/mobile, and watch what it spits out. It'll spit out what failed, what passed, and some warnings, even some suggestions for even minuscule things like the title tag. Is this the best title tag for this document, and so on. Really cool. Go play with it when you've got some time. Slide 71. We are in the home stretch here. Last few slides, and so it's fitting that we wrap up with what the ideals might be of the mobile web. These are, of course, my opinion, and you might have different ideals. But let's take a look at some of these. 72. Well, if we've got the three C's, we can't not have the three D's. And that is, we need a mobile web that is desirable, dependable, and disciplined. So we need something that, when I ask the question, how many of you we're delighted by the mobile web experience, that everyone raises their hands because it's desirable. We enjoy accessing mobile web content on the go. Dependable, that we can expect some consistency, especially if I'm swapping devices. I might be purchasing a new device tomorrow and might expect some consistency from that. And then finally, discipline. And again, I think the best practices and other things that have been talked about are helping us be somewhat disciplined, helping us restrain and temper our desires to embrace this new medium. 73. An array of thought leaders. We need and already start to have an array of thought leaders. Of course, the Mobile Web Initiative is one of those. Others like Carlo Longino, Kelly Godo, Russell Beatty, Brian Fling, all these people that have started talking about the mobile web. When I, in fact, started researching the mobile web, this was my primary intent for doing so, that I figured if someone could start talking about this, talking about how we could embrace it, what the limitations are, and what we can expect the future to be, then you know what? People will probably start talking about it at large, and we might have kind of this movement, so to speak, of people excited about the mobile web and wanting to shape its future. And I certainly think we're headed in that direction. 74, we certainly need user agent consistency. This doesn't mean that every device needs to display the same as every other device in the market, but it does mean that we need to come to expect some consistency among those devices so that we as developers can develop more readily for those devices. You know, I believe that the best practices guidelines will certainly help with consistency, at least helping us understand what are some of the base factors to develop for. And I would hope at some point we begin to persuade the network operators and, more importantly, the actual user agent developers to help provide some of this consistency. Slide 75. I'd love to see a mobile device wiki. I've talked to several people. I had the chance when I was in London about a month ago to talk to some of Opera and Nokia's developers and other people. And this idea just keeps resurfacing. We need something that we can reference as developers to understand how mobile devices render content. The way this might work, well, look at it this way. Let's say there are those 159 devices on the market. There are many more than that, but let's just say there are 160, which is a lot. How do I, as a developer, understand how to code content for those 160 devices? I can't. I don't have access to 160. I've got four devices, and for me to get four devices alone was a bit of a challenge. It's costly. It's difficult to swap. You know, if you're not swapping SIM cards and things like that. I mean, it just can be a pain. So how do we develop for 160 devices? Well, perhaps a wiki of some sort would help us understand how each device renders content. And so here we'd have users go in and say, hey, I've got a Razer. And maybe they access the markup test pages and they say, okay, on a Razer, the H1 and H2 headings are displayed the same size. H3 and H4 and so on. And then we have this list, some document that we can reference to say, okay, I know my target audience has this, this, and this device. I'm going to go access this wiki. I see that here's some of the limitations of this device. Here's something I need to account for. In the end, of course, I'd still need to test on target devices, but this would help me understand at the outset or the onset how to exploit the capabilities of that device and what the limitations are. And then finally, 76. What else? What will the mobile web become? What is its future? And that's really where you and I come into play. You and I will help shape the future by crying out for consistency. Maybe some of you might cry out for Ajax. I don't know. But the point is that we have a voice. Let's use it, and let's help shape the mobile web and to see where it's going. Now, of course, we have to consider all of the network operators. The carriers stand to gain money or to profit from this, and we need to understand that and how that plays into it when we talk about walled gardens and things like that, especially here in the U.S. But nonetheless, we somehow managed, by crying enough, got Internet Explorer, the team at Microsoft, to bend a bit and understand, hey, standards are real. They're important. CSS is important. I think we can do the same in the mobile space. It might take several years, of course, but we've been through that battle once. Can we do it again? And I certainly think we can. Finally, it's time for questions. Why don't we open that up? And Philip, I'll turn that back to you as to how we're going to do that.
Yeah, thanks. Hi, Cameron. So if people have questions and you're on IRC, please type it into IRC, and then Cameron is going to read them out. Send email to ph@wc.org, and I'll be checking my email frequently over the next 5 to 10 minutes. So any questions on IRC or email?
While you're sending those questions, just allow me to take a minute to thank the W3C for inviting me and for making this available to each of you to listen in. I think that's exciting to see an organization like the W3C backing this and allowing us to have that voice and a place to discuss it. All right, we've got a few questions coming in. Have I used Wurfel in the past? No, I have not. I don't have that much experience with it. To me, it's a bit cryptic, and if a mobile wiki could accomplish much the same but in a much more accessible format, I'm all for that. The next question after that, in fact, is where do we set up the wiki? Go for it. Please do. I don't think I'll have the time, unfortunately, to get that running, nor do I have the programming knowledge, or even I'm not that familiar with wikis in terms of setting those up and getting that movement started. I look to all of you, or one of you, to set that up and get that movement started, and I'll certainly give my input and oversight along the way. But I would rather see the community provide something like that than just me getting that started. Question from Ronan. Do you feel that the device proliferation problem is getting better or worse? That's an excellent question, Ronan. I think the proliferation of devices is certainly going to increase. So now we talk about something like the Nintendo DS, of all things, having a browser on it, which happens to be an Opera supplied browser. We're going to see more and more devices. And again, it could be a watch. It could be a vending machine, for Pete's sake, that we have to access the web from or develop for. And so I think that's why I come back to this idea of consistency. Some idea of standards that if we just could latch on to knowing as developers that, you know what, this screen might be at 120 by 120, this one might be 300 by 300, but I can rely on some these certain elements, selectors and so on, displaying somewhat similar across the devices, then it's not so much a threat for me as to whether or not that proliferation increases. I'm all for it. I'd love to see more devices. Let's just make sure, however, that it's relatively easy for us to develop for those devices as they come out. A few more questions here. Isn't there a hidden hypothesis that each mobile web user has access to a desktop? Do you think it is true for the future? I'm not sure I understand that question. I'm going to skip to another question. Steph, if you want to clarify that question, are you saying that is it a myth that each mobile web user has access to a PC? That might be your question, but again, if you want to type that in again, that'd be great. Next question. Here we go, from Mail. Do you feel it's best to design for the highest level of display or lowest? Some say lowest and then test and play with higher levels of design. I'm reading the question here. I believe go highest and plan for degradation. Oh, I don't know that I have an opinion in that respect. You know, sometimes we think about developing for the lowest common denominator. I don't know that approach is right in the mobile space. I think we have to develop for the lowest cutoff denominator. Perhaps do something similar to what Yahoo did and say, okay, we're going to develop for 10 devices and then just have to trust that it's going to work well from there. And some of those devices may be like the Palm Trio, which has a rather large screen. Some of those might be like the Nokia 6800, which has a smaller screen. But, and you know, maybe we have to go the route of supplying a basic and advanced version as well as Yahoo did. And so I think that question is really specific to your organization and what's your audience. Your audience will dictate what the appropriate method is and whether or not you need to develop for the largest screen versus the smallest screen. So again, I don't have too much of an opinion on that because I think it's really organization specific at this point. It may not be moving forward, but right now it seems to be. Let's see here. Here's another question. I'm not a big fan of Flash, but would that be worth investing in for consistency's sake? Now, you have something called Flash Lite, right, which has been making some waves in the mobile space. I think that's yet another element, just like Ajax, just like SMS, just like SVG. Some argue that SVG is the better way moving forward. I don't know that I'm going to argue either way on that. I would just say that it's one piece of the puzzle that should be considered. Where it's going to go in the next few years remains to be seen. Dean. Okay, so Steph, clarifying your question. I mean that in a near future, it is possible that the lone way some people would have access to the web could be through mobile phones. Well, we know that's the case right now, especially in developing countries. Some of those people, their only access to web content may be through a mobile device. That's part of the reason it's so fascinating to know that perhaps people throughout the world that never had access to the web can now, or perhaps will do so at some point down the road, have access to web content just through a mobile device. That's what's exciting for me as a site developer, as a site designer, knowing that my work has the potential to reach so many more people than I'm used to right now. I hope that answers your question, Steph. Let me know if not. All right, let's see here. From Mail, where might we get info on Yahoo's recent strategy? Oh, gosh, let me see if I can pull this up here. If you go to my site, CameronMall.com, if you scroll down, let's type this in here. So CameronMall.com /linkage. If you pull that up, or even just the homepage, and to the right, you'll see some links. You'll see the FIFA Yahoo link, oh, I don't know, 5 or so links down. There's a beautiful article that outlines the approach that they took. It has photos. It has descriptions about their methodology and so on. Fascinating article. Please go read it. Next question, where might we get specific strategies, scripts for delivering sites to mobiles? Oh gosh, there are a ton of sites out there, a ton of resources. I've been meaning to, in fact, compile some sort of list on my own. You might go to Russell Gaddy's site. I think his site, let's see if I can type it in here. He's no longer actively blogging. I expect he will again at some point in the future. If I recall correctly, you can go to his site, and somewhere in there he's got this mega links list, which has just a ton of links to resources for just the mobile space in general, but also for the mobile web as well. Thank you for K2. Thank you, K2, for posting that link. That's the correct one for the Yahoo methodology. Alright, so specific strategies. So back to this question, entire separate sites, homepage only. Again, I'd probably go back to those resources and read more about what we've talked about today. You might go back to my site as well, go into my archives and try to find the mobile web series that Brian Fling and I authored, which dives into deeper detail about these four methods and what the pros and cons are for each. Another question, are there stat programs collecting info on what devices people are using to view your mobile site in the same way that your regular website or web stats might tell what OS or browser a user is using? Great question. I'm certain they're out there. I don't have access to those myself. If any of our listeners have access to those, please populate our chat with a link or two to those stat programs. I'm sure they exist, but I'm not familiar with them if they do. Let's see. Any other questions? Yeah, K2 says Mint. I don't know if Mint shows that or not. I'm guessing it doesn't. It might just lump it into some giant category of other browsers.
Okay, so if there are no more questions, I don't have anything on mail either. I'd like to thank everyone for the participation, and I'd like to thank Cameron for his great talk. I think it was very very interesting, very inspiring, and I'd like to close the call. So thanks a lot, everybody, and we might follow up also a bit in email and send a bit more information about some of the things we're doing in the WPC. And of course, we also probably send you a feedback form and sort of to get some feedback on this webinar. All right. Thanks a lot. Goodbye.
Thanks.